And welcome into a Saturday night on KABC. We call it Open Mind. My name is Bill Jenkins, and we're here to introduce your mind to some new things that may stretch it and expand it and cause you to reach for new horizons and thoughts. And tonight, frankly, is a difficult show in its own way. Because some of the things we deal with tonight are not the things that perhaps we want to hear about the world that we live in. Our subject is Royal Rife. He is a local citizen of our community, in fact. Did some very monumental things, in fact. It could be said that he perhaps found the cure for cancer and leukemia and catastrophic diseases. For he was a man well ahead of his time, certainly a man who had an open mind. And that great work that happened decades ago was somehow or another thrown away. Reason? Well, I think the facts are pretty clear that the reason was greed. And we'll get into that with you tonight. Our guests to talk about that are some people who know, who have studied very closely the life of Royal Rife, who was the inventor of the Rife microscope, and in that microscope, which was one of the most incredible optic devices that has ever been developed, probably stands that way today. I have Steve and Laverne Ross with me of the World Research Foundation. And did I get it right about Royal Rife?
Yes, I would say that you phrased it very accurately.
The saga of this researcher... scientist. We can't call him Dr. Rife, can we?
No.
Although he certainly knew as much about medicine as any doctor who has any sheepskin on his wall, right? Is one of great triumph and joy and then all at once shattering defeat. Why is that?
Well, I think it was a matter of the time period. As he said, really, the last words before he died, the mistake he made was looking through the microscope. He never felt it was a mistake building the microscope. But once he visualized the microorganisms in the particular state that the microscope would allow to be viewed, he came in direct combat with the prevalent theories of the day in regards to medicine. And I think that was the big problem.
In other words, the researcher, the innovator, the one who finds something new, has a great deal of trouble with the establishment if it disagrees with what the establishment thinks is.
Definitely, it is not something that's new. He had a tremendous amount of credentialed individuals behind him. However, he was bucking an establishment at the time that tended to favor pharmaceuticals and chemicals, whereas his particular discoveries tended to show that oscillations and frequencies might be something more conducive to the body.
Well, just to whet your appetite a little bit then, if you just joined us. Dr. Rife looked at the little microorganisms that were giving us things like cancer and leukemia and tuberculosis and all of that, and he was able to shatter them, destroy them, with a oscillation of electromagnetic energy. Now, his peers did not like that because he was not using chemicals or cutting. Is that what it boils down to?
I would say very much. In fact, to help clarify, there were really two aspects that were taking place. Dr. Rife had invented a microscope that was, at that time, and even today, 10 times more powerful than any light source microscope. Now, along with that, he also developed a frequency device which he used to generate the frequencies to devitalize various organisms. We have found most of the times when people hear the story, they tend to combine or mix up the two, but there was actually two different processes that took place. Dr. Rife, Royal Rife, had an advantage of an employer, Timken, Mr. Timken of San Diego, Timken Ball Bearings, that had quite a bit of wealth and put in an enormous amount of money to build the laboratory. Rife proceeded to build the most sophisticated microscope that we feel even today has ever been developed of a light source quality. Now, he spent many years viewing and peering through this microscope, and it was these various discoveries of the electromagnetic constituency, really, the frequencies of various organisms, that if that was all he had done, would be quite remarkable. But he went one step even further than that, and he found a way to devitalize the microorganisms, the viruses of cancer, tuberculosis, strep, leprosy, very, very remarkable.
Quite a long list. I think 52 different microorganisms.
That's correct.
That he had learned how to devitalize, as you say. In other words, kill.
Right.
Including in that cancer as one. I have looked at the movies. I have looked at the movies that were taken through the microscope. I have looked at the movies that showed him developing cancer in the rats, for instance. Horrendous cancer. Taking the cancer cells then and implanting them. And then we look at the cancer cells through the microscope. And we see then the cancer cells destroyed with, what is that, an Abrams generator?
Right.
And they are destroyed right before your eyes. I have looked at the data and the history that he went on then and used this on human patients. And he did a terrible thing. They were cured. Time frame?
1934.
In the early 30s.
Right.
Why do we have cancer today? Why is this technique not being used today? That's what we're all about here tonight. Because there is something not working well in our society. And that's the reason it's a difficult shot. You would think that if someone could relieve the kind of suffering, the cancer, leukemia, and tuberculosis, and, well, 52 different catastrophic diseases have contributed to the existence of man since 1934, that he would be regarded as a great hero and be revered among all of us, and certainly among those in the medical profession. But that's not the way that story turned out. And it's not because he couldn't do or didn't do what he did. It is because he could do exactly what he said he could do. And how very sad. Do you want to stay aboard? I'm Bill Jenkins. With me, Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation on Open Mind on Talk Radio 79 KABC. IFE. He is a citizen or lived here in Los Angeles. Her laboratory was in Chatsworth, I believe.
San Diego.
Or in San Diego, and was very much a part of the scene in the late 20s and the early 30s, and a very, almost like Tesla for a while. He was the champion of the cause.
Absolutely.
Because he was doing great things. But the secret to what he found out, and let's start the story from the very beginning, are the amazing microscopes that he developed. This is a 50,000 power optical microscope. Which puts it on par with the electron microscopes of today, does it not?
Well, the electron microscopes recently have gone up to over a million magnification. However, the drawback is that many times because of the process, they're looking at dead cells. In fact, if you can imagine today's science, many of the organisms they look at are already dead. And we've always jokingly said that's like picking up a dead dog in the street and trying to figure out what the personality is.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what a lot of today's research is. When you put these specimens in the slide into a vacuum and bombard it with electrons, you destroy it. You are not looking at the same organism. Rife was able to build a device that even today, the theoretical limitations of a light source microscope with clarity is supposed to be 2,500, and he had a 50,000 power microscope.
And by the way, that microscope is still here.
Yeah, so it had been lost for about 50 years.
But it is ensconced and very capably so in the hands of the World Research Foundation.
Yes, we might add, though, it's not on our premises.
No.
It's in a safe place. It's a remarkable story, as you mentioned, of really the heights of scientific achievement and in regards to Rife, really the depths for an individual.
Well, let me just shut up for a little bit and let you tell us the story of the development of the five microscopes and what happened to them.
if you want to. You have the floor.
Just Steve. Jump right in there.
Jump in there and go.
As I had mentioned, Rife had the support of two really influential individuals with a lot of money, Timken and a man named Bridges of Bridges Carriage Company. They provided Royal Rife with all of the money and all of the scientific equipment that he wanted. He proceeded to feel that the microscopes of the day really weren't utilizing principles that would be beneficial for scientific research. And he, in his own laboratory, built a sequence of five microscopes. The first microscope achieved 17,000 magnification. The universal, which was number three, achieved 50,000. And the other three were developed for various functions. Now, the remarkable thing about this achievement is that not only was he able to achieve very high magnification with clarity, but a very, very remarkable thing happened when he peered through the microscope. He was able to stain the various organisms using frequencies. In other words, as he peered through the microscope, utilizing the principles of the scope, the various viruses would illuminate in their own natural color. Now, so we don't lose a lot of your viewers, we're not going to go into the highly physics or the technical aspect, and we'll try to keep it simplistic, but the idea is that, as an example...
I got a bright bunch out there.
Okay.
Yeah, they can stay with me.
Okay. The virus of cancer was always a purplish red. The virus of typhoid was always a turquoise blue. And 60 various diseases, the viruses that really were prevalent in that diseases would illuminate in a color. Now, why this is very, very intriguing is once you know the color, you can determine the frequency. That is what color is. And he then was able to discover, as you mentioned earlier, the mortal oscillatory rate or death frequency of those viruses based on the colors that they would give off. Now, the principle he used was basically heterodyning light.
Mm-hmm.
And then he would take a substance that would normally not have illuminated a color, and it would illuminate. Now, he also had a very strong technical group behind him, including Dr. Lee DeForest, who is regarded as the father of modern radio tubes,
yes,
who built a frequency generator. And it was said of Royal Rife that he would spend anywhere from 36 to 48 hours almost straight peering through his microscope at the slide with the color, turning a frequency dial very, very slowly. And when he hit the correct frequency, the color would immediately extinguish from the slide or really through his viewing microscope.
Because he was looking at a living organism.
Absolutely. Instead of the often dead organisms you would look at through the electron microscope.
Mm-hmm.
But really in the simplistic way, once that color or as soon as that color was extinguished, that was the mortal oscillatory frequency of that microorganism. There was a different frequency, not only for each different virus, but he, and you asked me earlier what the problem was, he unfortunately ended up at a time when there was a tremendous battle going on between the camps of Pasteur and Beauchamp, which had continued for many years. That is the feeling that microorganisms within the body mutate. It is not just one organism all the time. That even the cancer virus mutates during different stages of its development. And this is what he verified 100% through his microscope. So a frequency for cancer would only work at that cancer at a particular state, but he discovered the frequencies at other stages even of the cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So you really, as I mentioned, have two incredible processes going on. One was the building of an incredible microscope, but number two, the frequency devices, which were also later to really, we feel, be the crux of his problem. You might say, well, what is the big threat of a microscope? Really, there is no threat of a microscope. The threat was a technique that eliminated diseases by frequency rather than by chemical.
And who was that threatening to? Certainly not the people.
No.
Not the patients.
No.
Not the ones with cancer.
No, you would have to look at, again, the pharmaceutical industry of the day. However, even in our records, we do not have direct evidence that this particular person was responsible. However, you would have to say, as an example, there were over 100 newspaper articles talking about the microscope in the 30s and 40s. There were articles in the Smithsonian Institute of the U.S. government. There were articles in the Franklin Institute, Scientific America. Today, if you go through the computer, you find no references that Royal Rife ever existed. You find no references that the microscope ever existed. And just in our local area, with the advantage of UCLA's library and University of Northridge, with over 350 books on microscopes, there is not one sentence, not one word of Royal Raymond Rife or the Universal Microscope. Now, one thing we have not really stated so far in the show is who was utilizing the microscope. We had E.C. Rosenau of the Mayo Clinic, who even today is considered one of the greatest researchers in the history of the Mayo. We had Arthur Kendall of Northwestern University. We had Milbank Johnson, locally of the AMA, which is very interesting. He was one of Rife's biggest supporters. We had Carl Meyer, who was regarded as one of the best biologists in the United States. All of these individuals used the microscope, and the poliomyelitis virus was seen at the Mayo Clinic by Rosenau. Now, with all of that as a background, it becomes even more remarkable that not one line appears in any book about the microscope.
And those men all wrote papers.
Absolutely.
And they wrote books.
Right.
They were great researchers.
Right.
They utilized this incredible instrument. They saw the poliomyelitis virus with it, probably with the universal microscope, which is the only one left. And thank goodness it's in your hands. And not a word. Did they know of the electronic way of getting rid of the viruses?
All of the doctors were quite aware. In fact, at first, these researchers were very interested in discovering the cause and nature of diseases. After they were able to demonstrate that a lot of these were viruses, in fact, to really keynote exactly what you're saying, Rife not only saw the virus of cancer, he had photographed it in 1934, and it wasn't until a few years ago that they finally admitted there was even a virus for cancer. All these individuals did write at first. E.C. Rosenau in the internal staff meetings of the Mayo Clinic wrote that due to this microscope, they were able to see forms of tuberculosis and typhus that they had never been able to see before. So they were writing at the beginning. When the frequency device was started to be utilized, this is when there seemed to be a clampdown. In fact, there was an article that appeared in the San Diego Tribune, "Disease Organisms Destroyed Claim of San Diego Scientist." It seems that once that particular article came out, that everyone else really quieted down. There was not too much talk. Even E.C. Rosenau never spoke about the Rife microscope again until his deathbed. And basically the thing that he said at the end was that the Rife microscope was legitimate.
Well, we know it's legitimate.
Definitely.
And we know these things were done. We have photographic evidence of that. There's a great deal of documentation to support not only the legitimacy of the microscope. In fact, it's there. And I guess a qualified researcher can get past you, too, and get a chance to utilize it.
That's right.
We also have seen photographic documentary evidence that he was utilizing an electronic method of killing the viruses. But it's not being used. And the viruses continue, and people die. Horrible deaths. And that is sad. Let's explore that a little bit further. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Stephen and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation. We're talking about Royal Rife. Sherman Oaks out there. Marvelous facility for researchers. What they're doing is, we'll get into what the World Research Foundation does. We've had them on before, and their work is delightfully important, and certainly they are the keeper of that Rife microscope right now. But let's continue the story. Did Royal Rife then start utilizing the science that he uncovered and start literally actually curing the diseases?
Yeah. After he did his experimentations, and that was using the microscope with the slides, beaming the frequency device on or directed at the slides, it was eventually felt that it should be proceeded to the next step, which would be humans. So a special medical committee was formed in 1934 with Milbank Johnson as the chairman. Now, as I mentioned, interestingly enough, Milbank Johnson was the local head of the AMA in Pasadena. On that committee were several individuals, including Rufus von Kleinschmidt of USC, who was then the president of USC, Waylon Morrison of the Santa Fe Railway, Charles Fisher of Children's Hospital. We had E.C. Rosenau of the Mayo, Arthur Kendall of Northwestern. Now, they went to Pasadena County Hospital and took 16 incurable patients out to the Mary Ellen Scripps Ranch in La Jolla, California, with the idea that now that they had discovered the mortal oscillatory frequency, they would then use it on this group. Now, the pathologist of their research group was Dr. Alvin Ford, who was president of the American Association of Pathologists. He examined, and the committee examined, these individuals before the test and after the testing, and the results were that 14 of the 16 individuals were cured within 90 days, and the other two were cured 1 week after the special committee had closed. The special committee was sanctioned out of the University of Southern California.
These were all considered terminal patients.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And there was a 100% cure rate.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was under some of the most prestigious names in medicine that we could come up with in Southern California at the time. The diseases were what? They were terminal. That's, you know, bad enough. But cancers.
They had
various things.
Absolutely. They were specifically chosen as the cases that were incurable at the time by orthodox methods.
Uh-huh.
And I don't want to imply that they were just wildly experimenting, because this group of individuals had incredible credentials. They were very humane, and they took great care. This wasn't just a last-ditch effort, because they felt very secure that this would work. Now
we must point out, too, Stephen, that the information that we're giving you here is not, you know, we're not telling a little story here.
Right.
This is highly documented information that is a part of the record.
Right.
And anybody can have it anytime they want it.
Right.
We want to keep laying this foundation on you, because it's not just a little story out of the air.
Well, I think that what might help is that we have 500 personal letters of the various doctors written back and forth to one another. We have the logs, their research logs. We have the newspaper clippings that existed at the time. We have the internal staff meetings of the Mayo Clinic, Northwestern University. So to answer your question or your statement, it's more than just idle gossip.
It is very documented, as well, much more documented than the Iran scandal is. Okay? So let's continue with the story. Why is it that we're sick now? Why hasn't this technique been used? What happened to it?
Well, I think, just to interject a little bit, that right after that happened, there was an announcement in the newspapers. At that time, a lot of activities happened that people quieted down for a while. And I think what happened with Rife is he pulled in a little bit in what he was doing, because at that time it was hard for a lot of people who were thinking in one way to accept his new technique. And
the people you're talking about are those in the established medical profession.
Those probably, except with those that were initially working in that committee.
Yeah.
who are overseeing the committee.
They saw a 100% cure rate using their own AMA standards of some of the most qualified men in the world.
That's right.
And no chemical has ever done that. Ever. And that frightened them?
I think that was very surprising to them. I think even today, for most of us, that would be quite a Herculean feat to do. We're still not capable of handling that in today's
society. Did they duplicate it? Did they try to say, well, this was a fluke, that we made a mistake, that all of these terminal patients were actually going to get well anyway, and try it again, and just figure that, you know, we picked a bunch of ones with strong genes?
The basic problem resides in the fact that in the United States, the feeling is that the body is chemical first and electrical second, which any physicist and even most doctors know that if anything, it's the electrical first and the chemical second. There's been enough studies that have shown that there's an electrical reaction moments before or instances before the chemical. So the problem is, even today, as you're aware of the Congress we held, and we brought Bjorn Nordenstrom over from Sweden, who is shrinking cancer tumors with electricity, yet he's fighting even today, 50 years later. The problem is there is a very strong element, and it's not just in the United States, it's in the whole world, that has been so conditioned for this quick answer with the chemical, with something that's just a pacifier, that they've completely forgotten about the laws of physics. So this is the problem then, this is the problem today. You have doctors who are trained in a technique, and I think this is the sad thing about science, and you really mentioned that, Bill, when you first came on. People get locked into one way, and anything new, I'll always remember the case, and it slips my mind, the doctor who had the audacity to say you should wash your hands between patients and was laughed out of medicine and, I believe, committed suicide and killed himself. Then later they discover, yes, that there are germs, there are bacteria, but anything that's new has to fight and struggle. But now we had another problem. We had a great financial base of individuals. We had a blossoming industry of chemicals that was extremely powerful at the day. But again, I'm not going to say that they directly came over and physically did something to write. However, there are a lot of records that disappeared. There were a lot of doctors who did not ever want to talk about Rife again. In fact, as you know, I brought a picture into your studio here, an original picture from the 30s. On the back of it is a listing of about 25 doctors. Well, 5 years after this picture was taken, three-quarters of them claimed they didn't even know who Dr. Rife was.
And there we have a photograph of them at an elegant dinner.
Well, it was actually a celebration. It was an article that was written in the paper celebrating the end of disease with the most prestigious medical doctors in the United States all present.
So, the sadness of the story is that we had this man, Royal Rife, who invented and developed and fashioned together these incredible microscopes, which allowed us to see into a world we had never seen before. Allowed us to see an enemy we had never seen before. And working with people like DeForest, who gave us the vacuum tube and actually the front work on television and the radio industry that we have and others, he was able to kill the enemy electronically. That's data. That's photographed. You can look at that happen. And I suppose there's a way that we can let you see that. I've seen it. But this electronic generation of a way to kill these viruses that were only giving us cancer and leukemia and tuberculosis and a whole raft of things did not fall in within the mindset of the medical community and certainly did not bode well with the pharmaceutical industry and all of the great billions of dollars it was making and the powers that it had over the society. Is the way it shapes up. The data is there. Is that what we're saying?
Or are you just going to let me say that?
That's what you were saying. But
that's
no,
what I was saying.
We would, we'll reiterate that...
I'm a well-known iconoclast.
Right. The facts would tend to point out that obviously the people in the electronic area would not want this to disappear. The pharmaceutical industry, and again, you cannot condemn the entire pharmaceutical industry, but let's just say the people involved in the chemical aspect, this would not be something that would be conducive to the industry that they were building and have built ever since. It would seem logical that they would not like something like this available. Now,
so what do they do? They exercise great influence, ridicule and put down, go to the courts, in fact they did they not?
Reich was taken to court for the frequency devices. In fact, that was the element that even today has been the stumbling point. The frequency devices. Now, stress very strongly that those were not very well documented cases. The evidence that was presented did not have anything to do with the efficacy of frequency, and really had nothing to do with the original devices that Reich had built.
And tell that to one of those patients who were terminally ill who were walking around, that it didn't work. Isn't that the bottom line, really?
That is the bottom line.
Isn't that what we should be interested in as a society? Isn't that what a doctor should be interested in? Isn't that what the owner of a pharmaceutical company should be interested in, that a way has come down the line that will get rid of disease? And if it doesn't happen to be what his company is doing, then go make that device.
Well, let's challenge your listeners. You have a big audience. Let's see if we can pull some pharmaceutical. How about a Pepsi challenge?
Yeah.
How about a...
Well, the listeners are already beginning to line up. Let me give the numbers, if I may, to get in to ask about this. I do have a question now. We have the microscope. We have the data. Do we have the frequencies? Can it be employed again? Or are there laws or things that say we can't use it now on somebody who is terminally ill? Are ill.
Well, the frequencies are around, and yes, we could duplicate it. I'm sure we'd have to be under clinical studies again.
Well, certainly it needs to be done.
And bringing it out, definitely. That would be the way it would be tested. Seeing where it would come out today would be very interesting, where the openness is to something new, because still, in fact, it is something quite new. We're getting into devices now that are being used in doctors' offices that are built around frequency, so there's a more of an awareness right now that frequency does, in fact, enhance healthcare and have a positive effect on the body. But it would be very interesting.
Well, if I'm understanding, Laverne, what you're saying that right now the microscope is available, the frequencies are available, the way to generate the frequencies are available, the documentation of the past shows that they produce 100% cure rates so far. Where's UCLA? Where's USC? Where are these people? Where are the great medical facilities of this great community that we live here in Los Angeles? Why aren't they using it? Why aren't they even interested? Why aren't they talking to you?
Where does the research money come from? Who is giving the research grants?
I don't know whether Dow Chemical would invest in this or not, but maybe somebody who is interested in mankind would.
Well, now you're getting much closer to the key. And that is that the area of physics has been kept out of medicine for far too long a period. The whole body, everything that we are, everything that exists is frequency. They determine death by your heartbeat and your brain waves, which are both electrical. Yet all of the treatments, all of the therapies tend to be, again, on the chemical aspect. We would like to comment, too, that when you are immersed in this particular subject, and you read the studies, and you read the letters that went back and forth, Laverne and I would spend evenings where we would be heartsick, because you look at something that exists with the possibility of use. Now, there has to be money that is available so this can be researched properly, because even though it was very successful in the past, It is a part of the mechanism of our society that something be revalidated, but there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever, again, these are all laws of physics, that this would prove once again very, very effective. But we feel in our particular case that there has to be sufficient revenues so good studies can be conducted, and that really is the bottom line right now.
Surely, surely there's somebody up there that wants to cure cancer. Surely there's somebody who wants to get rid of leukemia, multiple sclerosis, and all of the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
And here seems to be an avenue that, oh, it's non-chemical and non-cutting. How very, very dastardly that may sound to some, but if you have that disease, it sounds pretty good to you. Let me give you the telephone numbers if you want to get in on this conversation, and this may be a good one tonight. And Los Angeles, Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation. And before we go to our callers, and they are jammed onto the line tonight, I'll tell you that. They want to talk to you, Steve. Why don't you tell us what Royal Rife himself said.
We have a direct quote, which I thought would be apropos now. Rife explained that the lethal frequencies for the various organisms, as in sound waves, exist in the very organisms themselves. And he felt the disease organisms could be disintegrated the exact way as a vase or glass can be broken when the appropriate sound wave, the resonant frequency, is played. When the ray is directed upon them, the organisms are seen to behave very curiously. Some kinds do literally disintegrate, others writhe as if in agony, and finally gather together in a deathly unmoving cluster. These, again, are Rife's comments. Brief exposure to the tuned frequencies, Rife commented, brings the fatal reactions. After the organisms have been bombarded, the laboratory reports show they are clinically dead. In fact, after Rife would use his mortal oscillatory rate on cancer, he would take a part of that tumor and put it back into the test rats, and none of them would ever develop cancer, even though he, up to that, would inject 500 consecutive rats with the cancer. Each one would develop cancer. Then when he used the frequency, no rats after that time, no matter how many times they were injected with that particular tumor substance that had been treated, would ever get cancer.
And that's, by the way, a part of that marvelous film. You can see that entire process, how he meticulously mm-hmm. went through that testing. Okay, let's go to the folks. Hello, Kay.
Yes, good evening to you, all of you. I was really, really interested in this. Now, has it ever been, I think you mentioned something that it has been on some patients, is terminally ill, is that correct?
Yes, yes, terminally ill patients, and they all made it.
Well, the reason I'm so, interested, my mom is lying very terminally ill from cancer right now in a different state in the hospital. And she has had chemotherapy. What is that machine that they put him in, an iron lung effect? Do you know what I'm talking about? Is that chemotherapy?
No, that's cobalt radiation or some other form of radiation.
Yeah, yeah, she's been in them things, and she said it's just scary as can be. Machines were so scary for her.
Okay, I want you to understand that we're talking about a science that was developed 50 years ago and then squashed.
Yeah.
And it isn't available now.
Well,
you have to live with the chemotherapy and with the radiation.
Yeah, the end result that I'm talking about. Now, my brother's kept my mom all these years. Now, they want him to come to the hospital and see if she's had any money. Her Medicare has run out, and he's going to have a lien on the house now.
You have a question, Kay, for...
Yeah, that's what I would like to ask them. Isn't there any private funds that anybody is setting up for them? Any private research centers, around the world? Hasn't anybody done anything, to help them?
To help all of us.
Yeah, uh-huh.
All right. See?
At this particular time, no. We, up to this point, have made sure that we've collected all of the data, secured the microscope, have the different films, the frequencies, we have the daily work logs, and I think now really is the time when something can be done with proper funding. up to this time and before having the actual microscope, which was a whole story in itself, how we even came upon this microscope.
Thank goodness you got it.
Really nothing could be done. So it's a matter, I think, now of people being aware of it, people making a decision that if we are truly going to make that all-out war on cancer that the then president proclaimed back in the 70s, and billions of dollars have been spent, then why can't money start being put into the effectiveness of frequencies in fighting diseases? Now, again, to answer your question, there has not been a lot of money spent here, but anybody who does research around the world will see that in Russia and in Germany and other countries, they are fighting these diseases with frequency, with magnetism and electricity.
And quite successfully.
Very successfully.
Well, that should be enough for the people to, you know, ask what's going
it's
on.
It's different in the United States, honey, and the reason is money.
Yes.
One thing I would suggest for you and all the listeners, I would suggest that the various charities that you give money to, that you might start asking them what research projects they have underway for the money that you have donated.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to point out, too, Kay, that the World Research Foundation is not a medical research foundation. It is a repository of some of the most incredible levels of information and data,
mm-hmm.
which is their function.
That would be interesting. Do you have tours or anything they can go out there and see the microscope?
The microscope is not on display. It is in a very secure place at this particular time.
You
however,
almost, you have to have a White House pass.
Well, I guess you have the film, so that would show.
Yes. Right.
We have the film, and we also have pictures, and we also have literature that's available for a person who's interested.
Yes.
Okay, Kay?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay,
good to have you aboard. And let's see, we have Jim on the line. Jim?
Hello, people.
Yeah, hello.
Hello.
This is a really exciting show. I practice Buddhism, the effect of which can be understood from the point of view of physics, and I've been real interested in curing disease through physics for some 10 years. I preached to several doctors in my city here, and I didn't get too much of anywhere, but I'm so happy that this kind of work has already been done. And I want to ask one, do you have plans or description of how to build these frequency generators, and how can we get in touch with your foundation? And I also think we should all write telegrams or send public opinion telegrams to the Surgeon General and the health, education, and welfare people.
There you go.
I'd like to see you get in touch with some people at the City of Hope in Los Angeles. And I'm a promotion person myself, and I believe I've known about this principle myself just through my own independent realization for some time, and I'm really behind you, and I hope this is really, really, really on the level, because I think that we should have some kind of revolution here and right away.
Well, to answer your question, if it was not on the level, then that would be discrediting people like Rosenau at the Mayo Clinic and Kendall of Northwestern and Milbank Johnson of the local establishment. And
what about plans to build the machines?
Well, there are definitely plans. Again, it's like anything else. You have to have the revenues to accurately conduct experimentation and tests. You want to have the best people possible who are doing it.
Well, we people have our hands on the purse strings of the country, and if I could have saved my good friend who was a retiree from the Federal Aviation Administration, I mean, he hired the PATCO operators and Reagan fired him. If I could have saved him as I watched him die of cancer, all I could do was chant, and I can't chant as heavy as a machine might be able to generate a sound wave and do the dirty work or the good work, you know?
Yeah, I think it would probably do a little bit more than chanting, but don't put the chanting down.
No, thank you, sir. I appreciate that. In any case, I really want to get behind you now. How can we get in touch?
I'll give you the address of the foundation.
Okay, I got a pen.
All right. The World Research Foundation, 15300 Ventura Boulevard, Suite 405, Sherman Oaks, California, 91403. And our phone number, area code 818-907-LIVE, L-I-V-E.
That's beautiful. I work about 20 blocks from you.
Well, we might, yeah. We might also suggest to the listeners that there was an article describing the entire Rife microscope and the illumination, the chemical staining by light frequencies that appeared in the Smithsonian Institute and the Franklin Institute, we have a reprint of those particular articles as well as a foreword by Dr. Royal Lee, and the title of the article is What Has Become of the Rife Microscope?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. All right. There's our little song. Thank you for your interest, Jim, and your enthusiasm. Get out there and go to work for us, would you?
Yes, sir.
We're going to take a break for the news at 10 o'clock, find out what's going on the outside. But I think what's going on these next 2 hours will be quite fascinating, and you're invited to YouTube and was the father of broadcasting and electronics as we know it in our industry. He developed a way to electronically kill those viruses. And then there was a way developed to kill the efforts of Dr. Rife so that something else could go on, and one of those things that went on was death from catastrophic diseases. It's an interesting story, and I hope you're enjoying it tonight. David, you're on.
Yes, Bill. Thank you for one of the most magnificent shows of all time on your wonderful program.
Thank you.
And my best regards to Steve and Laverne, whom I know. I'd like to ask Steve and Laverne if you could tell us a little bit more about the nature of that electromagnetic vibration that will destroy the virus. Is it in the visible light area? And does it have any effect on, or are there certain frequencies that would have an effect on normal healthy tissue?
No, actually, the frequencies were not in the light area. The frequencies really were over a broad spectrum in regards to the various, not only the various diseases, but also the various states of the bacteria and viruses as they live through their normal life cycle. The interesting factor, I guess the best way of explaining it, is if you think of the singer who sings and breaks a glass, she'll break just one type of glass, but not every single glass that exists. That's
sure.
The one that resonates. So
yeah, that's specific.
Right. So it absolutely was not harming the healthy tissue. Only, in fact, when they found the correct frequency, it really disintegrated the walls, basically the cell walls.
It's almost as if the cells were crystalline or of a crystal substance, whereas the regular healthy cells are not.
Yes, and is that an electromagnetic vibration? Do you have a magnetic field that is used, or can you tell us much about that, the frequency device?
Well, the original device, again, and this is what really the discussion is, you're talking the rudimentary beginnings of even frequency devices that were built. Now, the original one was not... did not have a magnetic field set up, but that's not to say that something was not taking place at that particular time. The frequency device that they used was a gargantuan-type device when you compare it today with the frequency devices that they make. But basically, it was used for one millisecond, and that 1 millisecond of exposure was enough to devitalize or disintegrate every one of those organisms in the body.
Amazing.
It wasn't even a long treatment. But once again, if you remember, as we said, the concept of the singer who breaks the glass.
Right.
And again, it was only affecting those particular organisms.
Well, were there experiments run in which they would, let's say, go through that whole energy band, let's say, for a microsecond, and in a way wipe out everything on everybody, on anybody, so that there wouldn't really be any pathogenic organism left.
Just clean out everything, in other words, right?
Yes, clean out the whole system.
Clean house. Why not?
Well, I can tell you that there was one letter that was written between the doctors, and the letter said, one day while experimenting in the laboratory, we hit a frequency that shattered glass of a particular shape. It took the mossy substance off the leather chair. In fact, as they wrote to one another, it said that every disease organism that were in the test animals in the entire laboratory were all killed instantly with one frequency. Now, that was the good news. The bad news is they did not write what the frequency was in the letter to each other. They did not have it in any place whatsoever. And in fact, the story ended that they said that they pinched each other to see if they were still alive. All the test animals survived, and the only hint we have is that the particular form of glass, one particular shape, was broken in the laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
That could be duplicated.
Absolutely.
Yes. And you have all of the information necessary to rebuild that frequency device, or is there? Do you have a frequency device too? Right now.
The information exists.
We're talking hot seat here.
we're saying that there are frequency devices, and we'll just let you know that there are researchers all over the world who are using these particular principles and are very, very close to coming out with the same information. Now, they aren't working on the microscope, but they are working with frequencies, and they're demonstrating that, again, the laws of physics pertain even in illness. But the important factor here is that it can be duplicated. You've got much better equipment today than Reif ever dreamed about, and even Lee DeForest ever dreamed about in his day.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Steve, would the... you've probably heard of the work of Dr. Voll, electroacupuncture diagnostic, and talking in Germany, and lots of people using the acupuncture media as a way of using sometimes laser lights to
yes.
mm-hmm. act. Is this in any way similar to putting energy frequencies through the body?
Yes, there's no question about it. You're working with the electromagnetic spectrum. And as we mentioned, it's going to burst at the seams. We're very close all over the world with Nordenstrom's work, shrinking cancer tumors with electricity, with the Russians' work. As soon as that becomes more prevalently known, that they are shrinking cancer tumors up to 90% by using magnetic fields, that there are certain magnetic fields that cancer absolutely cannot survive in because you reverse the polarity of the cell structure, you will find that the Voll techniques, the electroacupuncture that's being used, all are in that electromagnetic spectrum, and you can electrocute. I'm going to use it very simplistic. You can electrocute any living organism.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Okay, David.
For your financing, are you going to maybe make an appeal to all of us? We could send donations in to you for this specific project.
I wish.
What we did is set up a World Research Fund, and that fund was just set up to handle this type of specific need, where we actually do current tests on things that have not been used or are not currently being used now to revalidate that particular thing. And so anyone who would like to donate to that, to the World Research Fund, it would be just designated for that type of natural research.
And will you be having a newsletter, perhaps, for those of us who donate?
Oh, yes. In fact, we will be getting in a little bit later into the show of what the World Research Foundation actually is, because... again, a repository for a lot of data. But just before the break, I want to mention again that we have a booklet that is available that describes the Reif microscope, the principles, the various diseases. And for people who want to send in a donation of $2 or more to the foundation, we'd be very happy to send out this booklet, which is a reprint of the 1944 article that was published in the Smithsonian Institute of the U.S. government, in their exact words in the Smithsonian, saying that they witnessed under the Reif microscope disease organisms such as tuberculosis, cancer, sarcoma, strep, typhoid, leprosy, all succumbing when certain lethal frequencies were applied. That is from the Smithsonian Institute's own editors.
Thank you very much, Steve. That's magnificent.
Thank you.
All right, David.
Bye-bye, Bill.
Good to have you aboard.
Bye.
We're 15 minutes past 10 o'clock on a Saturday night. With me, Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation. We're talking about Royal Reif, his microscope, his work. Nobody cared. Many died.
But,
oh, Greg.
Hello to you, Bill. Nice to hear you.
Good to hear you.
Well, I'm glad the previous caller covered some of the questions I wanted to bring up. I still have a lot left. First of all...
I know you're... talking a long way away from Milpitas or someplace, so speak up, Craig. We're having a little bit. There you go.
Yeah.
Okay. He was asking if you have specifications and plans, et cetera, for the frequency generators. What about for the microscope?
The
duplicate of that be built?
The microscope there was never any patent taken on it, and the specifications were really not written down anywhere. Rife at the time did not write them down. There were some general descriptions that were given in this booklet, which we will be sending out to those inquirers, but the specifics, because he used very, very unique principles. He used prisms and crystals in this microscope. It was very, very unique, and it does not exist in print anywhere.
And didn't he put anything down in form of notes, or were they just lost?
A lot of work was lost. A lot of records were lost, but the actual microscope, again, is still in existence. The basic structure is known. The concept of using counter-rotating Risley prisms where you are heterodyning light, that is well described in this little booklet. So there's quite a lot that can be done. We're just choosing to reconstruct this in an ethical way so that it is presented properly, that it is revalidated, because this is something that is so valuable that it should be done correctly and accurately and represented.
Yes, it certainly sounds like it. What strikes me is that that microscope being such an advance over previously achieved optics, you would think somebody would have submitted that for Nobel Prize consideration.
There was a, in fact, we would like to interject that an individual who was Rife's assistant the last 15 years of Rife's life, John Crane, who is very, very responsible for the preservation of all these materials, had related to us that Rife's name was submitted to the Nobel people, and he was turned down basically because he did not have a doctorate.
I mean, after all, we've got to get first things first.
And I think if you do a little bit more checking, you'll find that that particular body has a tendency to only award to those who do have the credentials as far as the degrees. However, one should ask in the course of history how many remarkable achievements have come from those who were not necessarily degreed from college.
I don't think Madame Curie had her doctorship whenever she...
No, I don't think...
Well, you refer to him as doctor. Was he a medical doctor then?
No, actually, that is an interesting facet of the story. Everybody, the other doctors, lovingly referred to him as Dr. Rife, and it caught on. However, he was not actually a doctor, even a medical doctor. But what he was an incredible microscopist, and he was a tremendous engineer. He did have a great knowledge of medicine over his years. And again, he had the most credible medical authorities of the day working with him step by step.
Just out of curiosity, what was his educational background?
A very, very little is known about it, actually. He, very, very little is known about it. He made quantum leaps in his research and investigation that were almost remarkable, but then again, that's how some of the great achievements come. When he had a feeling that frequencies were a very inherent part of viruses and bacteria, he went on a crusade to visibly demonstrate, to factually demonstrate that this was the principle, and off he went and started building this microscope. In fact, interestingly enough, we do know of his past. He worked over with the Zeiss people, who in Germany are its incredible reputation, and when he came back, he felt that the Zeiss people didn't even really have it all together in regards to microscopes, and he said he's just going to build his own, which he did.
Was he ever written up at the time when he was doing these things in Who's Who in Science or whatever, any of those kinds of publications where they compile all the people currently active in the field?
You're going to have to speak up again, Craig. You're fading on us.
No, I think...
No, we got the story. We got it there, but you were fading.
As far as we know, we haven't found him in Who's Who or that type of directory. We have several newspaper articles on him, but no, as far as we know, in that type of directory or Who's Who, we have not found it as yet.
And was it his assistant who you just mentioned who had taken care of the microscope for all these years, or how was it rediscovered?
John Crane, yes, had actually taken care of it. Had kept it under safekeeping for a while and kept everything fairly quiet and protection until the time was right again. And he preserved Rife's library as much as was possible, the books and a lot of the paperwork that Rife used. And he also preserved the microscope and a lot of the other equipment that was utilized at the time.
Good, he did that. Let me ask you one question on the treatment itself. When you're irradiating someone, or just to use a different word, bathing somebody with light of a given frequency, I would think you have a certain problem in that it only penetrates to a certain distance. Now, how would it actually kill off all the diseased organisms within the body?
Well, they were not using light frequencies. They were using electromagnetic frequencies in a different part of the spectrum. So it had nothing to do with a topical application. It was not regular light. It was actually frequencies that were generated and went through the body at a rapid speed. This is how the electromagnetics work in the cellular structure, which has been proven all over the world. So it had nothing to do with the topical application.
Are you talking about microwave frequencies or
more like a radio wave would go through you also, that type of technique?
Right.
One question kind of stuck out in my mind, even though I find what you've outlined to be quite plausible, and I've considered these types of ideas myself. You referred to, quote, the cancer virus, and we do know that there are viruses that are associated with cancer causation, but when you say the cancer virus, isn't that a little bit misleading term there?
Well, if you're taking something out of context, what we mentioned was that during the life cycle of the viruses, they take many forms. And I had already stated previously that it took different frequencies to devitalize even the cancer virus at its different states. So,
well, that's what I mean. When you in taking that sentence in that context,
right.
When you say the cancer virus,
we're saying what we're saying is cancer largely is caused by a virus. Now, the form of the virus can be many different forms. But what he showed in his work, it was definitely a virus.
And he definitely got rid of it.
Got rid of it. So, but
get rid of the cancer.
That's really what we're saying.
And that's the bottom line.
I mean, that's not to say I understand exactly what your question is, but we're not stating that it is one specific. It is a
family of viruses.
It's a family of viruses. In fact, again, in this booklet that we have, they showed that there were 10 general families of bacteria and viruses that changed based on the environment existing within an organism. They would actually mutate.
Well, that's what they saw, and they were pretty healthy people that were looking at them.
I'd really like to see.
Well, you're talking about Dr. Arthur Kendall, whose textbooks are still used for bacteriology in the classrooms. You're talking about E.C. Rose now at the Mayo Clinic. So I can't profess to be a medical expert, but those are definitely the quality of individuals who were confirming that.
So you're coming up against some pretty hefty guys there, Craig.
Yeah, you're saying that. On that in this article?
In this booklet reprint, yes.
And, you know, Craig, something might be more helpful or simplistic is that if you change the environment in which something lives, you take, for instance, if you take the oxygen away, we can no longer live. If you consider a germ or a disease, which is a dis-ease in the body, and you change the environment in which it lives, why, in fact, couldn't you kill it or change it into something else?
Killing part quite plausible.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also true that the expression in physical form of genetic material is affected by the environment that something grows in. But
right.
For one species of bacteria to change into an entirely different species is something of a different order.
Well, but now you must remember that up to this time, who was able to see it? And in fact, today, who is able to see it? So even with what you're saying, your information is based on a technology and knowledge that is currently in use, and the whole idea of this program is they were using a technology which was very plausible scientifically, and they were able to get to a magnification to see the very thing we're talking about.
And you're saying that the point is that they could see them while they were alive with this microscope?
Absolutely.
Right. Which the electron microscope can't do.
Yeah, right, I understood that, and that's an important point.
Okay, Craig, does that help you? We're going to have to run.
Yeah, I was going to just give you one last question, and this will be it. It would seem to me, you did say that every different bacteria or virus would have its own lethal frequency. In the course of experimenting, wouldn't they run the risk of wiping out the friendly bacteria or doing other damage?
No, the frequencies that they ran on, and again, we can only go by the paperwork and the letters, the articles that we have. They hit upon area frequencies. They never showed any adverse effects. In fact, the only big problem they had was when they first started, they found when they used it, even for that one instant, every day, there was too many toxins from these blown apart cells in the body that they gave a treatment once every 3 days, and the body then could assimilate. But we have no idea. I don't know what was taking place then.
Okay, Craig, does that help you?
Yeah, thank you.
All right. Thank you for the good questions. You're on Open Mind tonight. I'm Bill Jenkins. With me is Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation. We're talking about the work of Royal Rife, the Rife microscope, to which they could see living organisms that have been catastrophic to millions and found a way to get rid of them. But nobody cared. Hey, hello, Rick. Welcome aboard.
Yes, good evening.
Yeah.
It's funny, I was driving home listening to your program in my car. I got home, I opened my mail, and I have a letter from a dear friend of mine saying he just had surgery for major cancer. Yeah. And that kind of a coincidence with your show.
Well, sorry that it had to happen that way.
It happened. I have a difficulty. Several of my questions have been answered by previous callers, or I think you will cover in a few minutes. I wanted to ask a couple of different ones. I have a difficulty with the conspiracy theories that you're spinning tonight. I have difficulty with them in general. One of the problems I have is a theory, or maybe it's just a misunderstanding on my part, but you seem to be acting as though you can't get funding for this kind of idea. You can't get exposure for this kind of idea. I wanted to suggest that people will fund anything from bad software to B-movies. They will invest in all sorts of crummy ideas. You can get money for any kind of an idea. And it seems to me that if this idea is real, if it had any basis in fact, you would have hundreds of nuts interested to invest, let alone the serious people.
Well, to address that particular question, up until this time in this show, we have not really come out and presented the story about the microscope, nor have we gone out and solicited funds.
I had to nudge them a little bit to do it.
So,
why?
Well, as we mentioned earlier, this has been a trail that we have been investigating to when we had finally heard about the Rife microscope, to proceed to acquire the data, to learn as much of the story as possible, to acquire records, to acquire the books, to have the microscope, so that in going out and presenting this story, that we had all the facts, because how can you go out there? Now I can go along with what you just said. People can go out there with any kind of story to raise funds, but that is not how Laverne or myself or the World Research operates. We are very interested and concerned in this, and we want to present it properly, ethically, and with the complete story to be told. Now, in regards to the hinting of conspiracy, let me pose these questions to you. There were over 120 newspaper articles, including Scientific America, the Smithsonian Institute, the internal minutes of the Mayo Clinic. They used it at the Mayo Clinic for investigation of the poliomyelitis virus. There were articles from San Diego Christian Science Monitor. Now, at our foundation, we're connected to 350 computer databases worldwide. There is not one reference to the Rife microscope, which was already verified and in print to do 30 to 50,000 when standard microscopes only do 2,000 magnification. Now, would you not find it interesting that in perusing every book on the history of microscopes in large libraries, that there is not one word of that microscope ever existing.
I would find that interesting. I find that to be a particularly disturbing part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
And I certainly sympathize with the lawyerly pursuit of that hidden lead. But on the other hand, you have mentioned that there's a whole group of people, Dr. DeForest and several others of considerable fame associated with this man, that all of a sudden ignored him or forgot about him, conveniently it seems. And while on the one hand that could suggest a conspiracy, on the other hand, it seems to me to suggest that perhaps they no longer believed in what he was saying and wanted to distance themselves from a guy who they now considered nuts.
Now, I'm glad you brought that point up because Laverne and I, very early in our investigations, were confronted with a scientific individual who posed three questions. He said, A, there was a conspiracy, B, the microscope was just overlooked, or C, everybody found it to be a phony. Now, let's look at your last statement. If, in fact, the individuals had found it to be a phony and the right microscope was not effective, especially after there were hundreds of articles, would you not have expected that there would have been one article written somewhere about the negative aspects of the microscope?
Yes, I would expect that.
All right. In fact, there is not one article of any kind, nature, or type about the microscope. So our feeling is that the idea that it was proved incorrect and these people backed away does not seem to be accurate, because you're talking about a tremendous amount of exposure where somebody would have said something. You had investigative reporters. Now, the second position would be that a 50,000 power microscope just inadvertently disappeared and was forgotten. Now, we would find that rather hard to believe.
You're sort of assuming facts, not in evidence. Neither I nor anyone else listening has ever seen this microscope, so I wouldn't be talking about the microscope as though it existed, since I've never seen it. No one else has seen it that's listening.
Oh, No. The microscope exists.
Well, what I'm saying is...
And they have it. There's photographic evidence of it.
There's 100 newspaper clippings from everything from the Christian Science Monitor to the San Diego Union to the Scientific America to the Smithsonian Institute.
That were writing about a microscope, in fact, five different
and
ones.
And showed the pictures.
That existed.
But these documents are all 40 years old. So what I'm trying to say is that I have a hard time assuming that such a microscope exists and then use that to prove that it exists. That's my only impression.
Well, no, you can... they have the microscope themselves at the World Research Foundation.
Does it work?
Oh, yes.
Now, to follow your premise, I hope you're not inferring that articles written in Scientific America and the Smithsonian Institute in 1944 were all erroneous at the time, especially when you're talking about the Mayo Clinic having in their internal minutes discussions fully about the microscope at Northwestern University, at USC. Now, if you have the microscope in front of you, right in front of your eyes today, and you saw the articles 50 years ago, I would find it hard to believe what you're saying.
Okay, well, I want to say that I think your defense is credible, and you're making me more and more interested in the product. I still wonder a little bit, but I think you definitely marshaled your facts to be as conservative as you can. I want to make one last position, and then I'll go away. One is that...
That's okay.
One is that there have been several comments here about the revolutionary nature of the use of radio waves or radiation in the 30s and 40s, and that somehow would have made it a taboo in reality. My understanding is, I'm not a scholar in the area, but my understanding is that people were absolutely fascinated with what radio waves and electromagnetic radiation could do at the time, having to do with anything. And in fact, as you'll recall, there was a treatment at one time where they treated acne with x-rays and all sorts of interesting things, which later turned out to be catastrophic. But in any event, these things were being tried. I do not believe that the entire medical and biological industries of the 30s and 40s, not one single fringe organization anywhere would not have taken this idea and run with it. There were crazy cures for everything coming out in those days. Why wasn't one of them this?
Because the Royal Rife and his group were meticulous scientists that tried to keep a lid on this. It was very, very quiet. They did not push. They did not make outlandish statements about curing diseases. They just naturally went about their business. Once the story started leaking out, if you read the newspaper clippings, they did their very, very best to be very conservative and be very quiet and do their research. However, once again, after the 1939-1940 period, everything was very, very quiet. In fact, we have a letter written by Scientific America where they stated that they found it interesting that they had read about the microscopes in many journals except the AMA journal, which for some reason was one of the only ones not to even publish an account of the microscope, which I find fascinating.
It is interesting. Thank you very much for your defense.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for calling in.
Are you a lawyer, Rick?
I'm not a student, but I have a scientific background. So
you do a good job.
Thank you, Rick.
Good questions, and good to have them. David, you're on.
Hi, it's a pleasure to talk to you because I'm calling from Hollywood, Florida, and how I'm able to hear the show is a long story, but I have in front of me.
I'm delighted.
Yeah. Is that a first Florida listener?
Well, we have a lot of listeners in Florida, but usually not for this show. They don't have the satellites running this time of night.
I have a book in front of me. It's a 100-page report that called A Cancer Cure That Worked, 50 Years of Suppression. And it was just published this year. I fortunately have a few copies, and it's the whole story of the Rife microscope and the frequency instrument, as told by John F. Crane, who I was mentioned a little bit earlier, and a fellow by the name of Barry Linds. And I would very much like to give out the address of, if I might, of how one can get a hold of this report.
All right, you can if you'll tell us how you're hearing us in Hollywood, Florida.
On my other phone line, I have a friend of mine in California that has the radio to the line, and I'm taping it while I'm on the other line, while I'm calling in on this line.
Well, how wonderful of you.
Because of the importance of the show, and because I happen to know Steve and Laverne. I've been to their last convention, and I also happen to have been honored to meet John F. Crane from San Diego, who would work with Rife for the last 22 years of his life, and who is a very technical person that can do a lot with the implementation of Rife's work. And in fact, I think some things are happening financially to see that the research is taking place. And in other words, where Rife's work is to be repeated, but I can't relay any of those details. But let me give out the address.
A promise is a promise. Go right ahead.
Okay, John F. Crane. The book is $10. It's up 104 pages. It's just published. It's John F. Crane Corporation, or John F. Crane, C-R-A-N-E. And it's 4246 Pepper, as in salt pepper, as in pepper shaker, Pepper Drive. And that's San Diego, California, 92105.
Very good.
Is there a... Stephen Laverne, since I understand you have... John also published a 900-page book. I think it's about a 900-page book called The Polarity Research Manual. It's a very expensive book that goes into a very, very detailed technical end of Rife's work and related areas, and perhaps Stephen Laverne may, because I understand they have both of these publications, if they might like to just add some information about what John Crane has done and about these two pieces of literature that I've referred to.
Yes, the Polarity book is definitely in our World Research Library and is available for researchers. In fact, we haven't really gotten in too much into the foundation itself. It does state, and again, as we mentioned earlier, John was an assistant for Rife and is responsible for saving the materials and making them available and preserving them up to this time. So really, there's not too much more we can add to what you've said, that the books, the materials are available and are housed now in a place that we feel are very safe, and we're proceeding along with validating this instrument.
Is it also true that I believe that he also was put in jail a number of years ago for a few years as a result of his efforts in this area? Is that correct? Would you know that?
Did you get that information from him? Or?
Yes, I did. Not in detail, but I thought perhaps you had some information.
No.
In effect. Just as a further area related to this, the whole problems that have occurred by people who've tried to pursue bribes work.
Well, he had a great deal of problems in the latter part of his life. I didn't know that jail time was involved there.
Well, this was the assistant in reference to John F. Crane.
Oh, to Crane. No, I hadn't heard about that.
For the last 22 years with Rice.
Right.
The other thing I'd like to ask is, well, okay, I think that's, those were about the main points I wanted to raise on that. He would be very interesting to probably have on the air and talk to in reference to this whole matter. It might add an additional dimension to the situation. And I think the potential for perhaps dramatically extending the human lifespan using these kinds of principles, the kinds of knowledge that John relates in the Polarity Research Manual, are there. So that happens to be my interest.
I have a feeling, David, judging from the kind of reaction we're getting here tonight, that we will have to deal with Royal Rife and John Crane again, and we will.
Okay, thank you. It's a real pleasure to be on your show, and I wish it's a great pleasure. I wish we had the show in South Florida.
Well, thank you very much. I wish you did, too, and perhaps that'll happen one of these days. We have a number of affiliate stations down in Florida, and I thank you for going through the trouble you're going through to listen to us in Florida
tonight. Your show is worth it.
Thank you.
Thank you,
bye-bye.
David.
Bye-bye.
That's always encouraging. It's 12 minutes of 11 o'clock on a Saturday. It's Stella. Hello, Stella.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too well.
Well, what can we do to brighten your day?
I just turned on my radio and I heard you speaking, and I think perhaps I'm not too much in what you are on for, but I heard you speak of a chronic pain, chronic illness. I have had a chronic illness since 68.
Mm-hmm.
I have had two surgeries for tick to the root.
Well, Stella, what we were talking about was a technology that was developed 50 years ago. They could probably get rid of all of that, and it has been hidden and stopped.
I have been listening, and I feel that I really am not... my talk was not about all the things that you are interested in speaking about, but I just heard that tick to the root or that... chronic pain, and I have tried everything, everywhere, everywhere for tick to the root, which has left me with complete pain constantly.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that, and perhaps that had this work been able to surface as it should have been, that you wouldn't have to go through that right now. And that's what we're trying to bring to the attention of the public this evening. And thank you very much, Stella, for joining us. And...
okay. I just heard the
yes.
chronic pain, and I thought, there's maybe a doctor.
You knew what we were talking about.
No,
okay.
I didn't know what your other...
I mean, you understood what that was.
Yes, I did, and I was listening to all of it the whole time.
Okay.
And I hope it will help sometime. I have had surgery
for
cancer, but mine was very... very mild and very successful.
Well, let's hope that we can be successful in getting this out that you wouldn't have to do that again.
My tick to the root is something that there's been very little research.
Okay, and we're going to have to go, but thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much.
And Bob, you're on.
Hi there, Bill. It's absolutely great show.
Thank you.
I have several interesting things that one of them is since the whole process of Royal Rife's involved frequency generation in the cure of disease, and he existed at the same time as Nikola Tesla, who was a frequency generator,
mm-hmm.
that they meet. I wonder whether Steve knows.
Through one of our contacts, we were told, but again, we don't have any hard data on that, but these individuals all definitely knew of each other. And we find this fascinating. It's the same as George Lakofsky and the multiple wave oscillator, and there was much talk that this was developed for him by Nikola Tesla, but we don't think that there's any question that Tesla was very aware of what Rife was doing.
It was in the latter days of Tesla, but though he wasn't so active, his mind was very active. Probably it was his most active period. Wouldn't it be great if we knew what was going through it at that period in time?
Now, I'm really curious as to whether a frequency generator exists that could currently exist right now that could do this kind of thing.
I think any frequency generator can do the same thing. because, again, there were two separate instances. One is the microscope, the other one is a frequency generator, and a frequency generator, if it was attuned to the right frequency and had one or two other characteristics, would be able to do the same thing. The problem would be the frequencies that they had logged in their day based on their equipment would not necessarily be the exact frequency settings today, and that's where the experimentation would have to be, but a frequency generator would do it.
Well, they were not quite as primitive as we like to look in retrospect.
That is true, too.
However, I do have a little contribution here. I hope it's a contribution. And the chemo medical establishment has always opposed anybody who is not in it. If you did that, if you were a doctor, you were in, and you could even come up with some pretty far-out things. The opposition, for instance, to a chemist who was Pasteur, to his work, was, by the medical establishment, was to the point of practically imprisoning him for having dared to do anything that might treat a human being. And this is the kind of, you've also had some skeptical telephone guests tonight who are the type of people who will, in general, form the most violent kind of opposition to any outside the establishment approach.
Well, we've had skeptical people, and there's nothing the matter with skeptics. I think that skepticism is a very healthy thing.
Yeah, in fact, we would add that we ourselves are all skeptical. The three of us in the studio here are pursuing this from the standpoint that we want to learn. We want all the facts. I think that you have to approach it from that particular direction.
What I'm trying to suggest is the only way to obtain the money to do it is through a non-fractional approach. That is, you create a generator, use the frequencies known, and present this to some cancer patients as, hey, would you like to try this? And they will do the selling for you.
That is, unfortunately, that is illegal in the United States.
You're not charging them.
It doesn't make any difference. You're practicing medicine without a license.
It has to be done through the auspices.
Medicine had to involve a fee.
You have to be done through the auspices of a doctor, Bob, and it has to be done, if he wants to be accepted, what is known by an A-B blind test. And,
but you
don't
have to have a test to do it. You can say, hey, would you like to get in front of this machine just to experience it, not to cure your cancer, just to experience it. If
well,
the cancer were cured...
The data that would come out of something like that...
You don't need the data.
Well, you do need the data if you're going to get it out and into the mainstream. And the idea is to get it into the mainstream and to get it into
it. Because those kind of people who were experiencing these things and also in the experience obtaining a cure...
In the long run, Bob, you're correct in one way. The bottom line is that it works, no matter what the doctors may say, if that's the case.
Well, without belaboring the point, I'd like to just say there's also an immediate inference that if it can cure cancer, it can cure AIDS.
That probably is true. There's no reason to believe that it's not.
That's my contribution to your wonderful show.
Well, thank you.
It's a good
evening. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Bob. And, Margaret, you're on.
Hi, Bill.
We don't have too much time, so thank you.
Okay. I was wondering, now that you have the documentation and all of the evidence that you need to present this publicly, if you are interested in getting on nationwide television. And if so, have you tried to contact any of the major networks to do this?
I had to twist their arm to get them on this little local show.
Okay. Well, would they be willing? Because the thought occurred to me that right now the biggest thing that you require is communication.
That's true.
And if everyone of the listeners sent a letter or telegram to the major networks and just besieged them with letters, quite possibly you could get on one of the shows.
I think they're a good candidate for one for Oprah.
Oprah would be wonderful.
And the new ABC show in the morning.
Absolutely.
Good idea, Margaret. Thank you. We'll maybe build a fire under them here and get them going, okay?
Okay.
And we're going to take a break for news. We'll be back with Steve and Laverne. 50 years ago, all he did was a simple little thing. He built the most powerful microscope that had ever been built. He looked in there and he saw viruses that were devastating mankind. And with Dr. DeForest, Lee DeForest, he developed a way to kill all those viruses that cause cancer and leukemia and tuberculosis and a whole list.
and it never came to pass. Sad, isn't it? What politics and money and greed will do. Well, our guests tonight are Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation, and fortunately, so much of the work of Dr. Rife's and indeed his microscope, one of the five, is in their keeping. What all goes on at the World Research Foundation?
The World Research Foundation is a nonprofit foundation, Bill. We collect information from worldwide sources on all aspects of health and healing. We have an on-site library that has books going back to the 1600s in a wide variety of specialties. We also are connected to over 350 computer databases around the world, where we're able to scan, as an example, in the Medline databases, 5,000 medical journals in 7 seconds on any subject. Our foundation doesn't take any particular position. We're unbiased. We're neutral. We're open to the public, and basically our main purpose is to collect as much information as possible on every health technique, diseases and illnesses, so we can give an edge to somebody who's in need.
And this is open to the public and to healthcare professionals or researchers who need additional information.
And where are you located?
We're located at 15300 Ventura Boulevard, Suite 405, Sherman Oaks, California.
Being an old Valleyite, that's at the corner of Sepulveda and Ventura.
Ventura, right.
Right, right there on the southwest corner. That used to be the American Bank building. They moved across the street to the big building.
They did that right after we put in our literature. We were in the American Savings building, and then they moved the whole bank across the street. But we're very proud of what we're able to do. We have a network of advisors around the world in many different countries who send information to our foundation many times before it even appears in medical journals. And once again, this is in all the various specialties, but we are not just into alternative or holistic medicine, because we are tapped into every medical database of standard medicine.
So for the researcher, it is a haven.
We like to think so. We're trying to do that.
It is a fascinating place. I've had the pleasure of being up there myself. So one of the reasons I wanted you to explain that is because you are the World Research Foundation, and there would be some question, I thought, why aren't you researching the Rife microscope and doing all of these things that you want to do? It's not that you don't want to. It's not what you do. This
right.
has to be put in the hands of skilled doctors.
The professionals.
The professionals who know what they're doing, who can deal with this kind of technology, who may have to open their mind and change their mind about the way the human body functions and the way this disease is to be removed from the human body. But there certainly are those doctors. There certainly are those laboratories. They're somewhere.
See, I think an important element is we, in our foundation, acquire data. We look at that data, we analyze that data, we try to extract the valuable aspects, but we don't place a value judgment. The Rife microscope is one particular element that we're discussing this evening, but I think based on a lot of the questions of even of your callers, there is factual data that exists. We have scourges upon mankind that have not been cured. You have a medical establishment that is currently saying in regards to cancer that the answer is just around the corner. And Laverne and I have some old journals, the Science Newsletter from the 30s, that said the answer is right around the corner. They're just going to have a breakthrough. So the question really is, in relation to your last caller before the break, yes, there should be exposure. Yes, there should be a lot more pushing, because these should be tested out. We're all agreed that something is happening here, that there may be something important, and shouldn't we be trying every single element and aspect as to its validity and effectiveness? People are dying by the millions of diseases and illnesses that it does not appear the current modalities are effective. And I don't think this is any secret. It's even appearing in the medical journals.
Mm-hmm.
Ted Koppel on Nightline ran a show where he talked about the cancer war. What is happening with this war on cancer? The Rife microscope worked on a multitude of diseases, which showed that the basic principle is very sound. That is what we would like pushed. And if people really want to get involved, they should start pushing some of the established funding agencies. They should start pushing some of these research areas. And I would make this challenge to your listeners. write to the charities that you currently give money to who are doing research in the areas of cancer and ask them for their specific researches that they're doing.
Or write to the City of Hope, which is one of the great researchers here in the Southern California area. And we have so many. There are a lot of people who could take this information and run. The data is extensive. A lot of the work has already been done by some of the most credentialed doctors in the world. They were saying 100% cure rate of catastrophic diseases. Let's check that out. You know, these were not a bunch of mystics. These were some of the finest professionals we had in the business 50 years ago.
I'd like to throw in a particular article here, which I think you'll find interesting, from the San Diego Sun, January 7th, 1932. The article was Dr. Lewells Barker of Johns Hopkins University. Now, we haven't mentioned him. The article states, Dr. Barker had just come from a visit with Dr. Raymond Royal Rife, inventor of the new microscope, which recently created a stir in scientific circles, where it demonstrated a magnification of 10 times more powerful than anything in use today. He said scientists were claiming the microscope was violating all the laws of optics. So Lewells Barker said, I told Rife we would just have to let them get some new laws. Well, what I've always loved about this particular individual was people establish barriers in their mind. We had the individual who earlier mentioned that he didn't see how a virus could have different stages. Well, they don't have anything that can see to that particular depth. We put ourselves in little boxes, and this becomes our world. And really, what we're trying to do at the foundation, what you are doing with your show, is merely creating dialogue and interest to a degree that people start branching out from their preconceived notions.
We call it a reality box here.
Reality box.
And the reality box is really not much of a box. It's usually just a little one. The thing about laws, you know, the laws of optics, the laws of physics, we have found out that those laws were not fingered by God on stone on Mount Sinai and handed to Moses, that they were simply the observations, the best observations that could be made by men. And they're not laws at all. And we need to keep that in mind. Okay, let's go to George. Hi, George.
Hello, hello.
You're on.
Several short things. First, Bill, this is the second time I've listened to your program. And a bit of a regret that I haven't heard all of those that preceded.
Well, thank you, George. How nice of you.
A fascinating program tonight. The name of the poor fellow who tried to get the doctors in the Viennese maternity wards to wash their hands was Ignaz Semmelweis.
Right, thank you.
I have a suggestion. You're saying, you're urging the listeners to write to hospitals and to
research organizations,
conventional research sources, and I think that's a waste of time. There are just too many millions of sincere man hours of research on the surgical and drug-based cures for disease, too many professional reputations, too many egos, and too many high salaries for anybody to ever crack with research money for him. If you're going to get any research money, you're going to have to go somewhere else. I suggest the electronics industry. Their reputations, about which they're equally rigid, aren't tied up with allopathic, conventional allopathic medicine.
Very good idea, George.
Very good.
I would like to ask if either Steve or Laverne is around the Institute during the week. I'd like to talk when I'm not limited by Bill's obvious constraints on time.
Yes, we're around there all during the week, regular hours.
8 to 5, something like that?
Yes, 8:30 to 5:30 in the office.
Actually, from 8 o'clock till 11:30 at night, but we're only open until
5:30. That's a bad money habit to get into.
They sometimes spend 24 hours a day.
Right.
Okay, I would like to call you sometime next week. I have some real suggestions.
Please,
good.
Please do. We'd appreciate that.
It's that kind of interest, George, and
okay,
those kind of ideas that
are worthwhile to go to tomorrow's.
It certainly is, and I will be there.
Oh, I look forward to meeting you.
All right, I look forward to meeting you.
Let me congratulate you again on an absolutely fascinating program.
Well, George, I thank you.
Thank you.
One other thing. You obviously made a point of keeping the location of the microscope, and I had the impression the name of his assistant to yourselves, and I think that was a very good idea. I think that care
will be.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
All right, George. You see, the real genius is out there among the people, not among necessarily the bushy brains of academia. You're on, Andre.
Oh, hi, Bill. How are you?
All right.
Okay. Well, since I'm involved with biomagnetics and all that, I'd like to ask about the electron microscope. You mentioned that. If I understand it right, no living material could be exposed in an electron microscope because it would kill it. And this microscope, it actually saw the viruses living and swimming around and so forth.
Well, in most of the cases, again, in the electron, this is what happens when a specimen is put in a complete vacuum and bombarded by electrons. Now, with the Rife microscope, living organisms could be viewed for hours and hours on end in a natural state. But here's even something more fascinating. The lens, the actual slide, did not have to be stained. Now, it was a concern that Rife and the other individuals had that when you stain slides, you are already altering the appearance of those microbes. And with this principle, you were not staining the slide either, and they felt you were looking at the genuine microvirus or bacteria.
Yeah. One thing about this generator, now this is separate from the microscope, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is this you're talking about radio waves, electromagnetic waves, and is this in combination with the with permanent magnets, or is this just a like a radio generator?
It was a radio generator, and he also ran the frequency through a tube that had a gas in it. There was a little bit more to it. As I said, it's this is one of those things that. A little bit of information can be dangerous, so we're not being able to explain and visibly show the entire device. Basically, it was a generator where he ran the waves through a tube that had a gas in it, and that went directly towards the body. He never touched the physical body. It was projected at the body.
Some caller a while ago talked about Nikola Tesla. And Tesla was coming up with an X-ray device before Rontgen. I hope I pronounced that right. And this sounds a bit like what Tesla had.
I think you can trace so many things back to Nikola Tesla and what he was doing in the turn of the century. This is why we would just not doubt that there was a knowledge, there was an awareness. Wright certainly knew all about Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm. Okay, two final quick questions. Have you ever heard of a cancer holistic healer named Norman Baker in the 20s?
No.
Well, he operated a clinic in a little city called Muscatine, Iowa, and he got in conflict with the AMA, and they got after him and so forth. But he was using vitamin A way back then, which, of course, the establishment now is touting as a cancer preventative and treatment. So it shows you, you know, a lot of treatments were around in the 20s and the 30s, but they were suppressed. And could you give your address again and perhaps your phone number?
The address is 15300 Ventura Boulevard, Suite 405, Sherman Oaks, California, 91403. And the phone number is area code 818-907-LIVE, L-I-V-E.
Oh, that's a good phone number.
Easy to remember.
Yes. I wonder if John Bedini might be interested in this device. If he looked it over, perhaps you could ask Bill Jenkins about that. And
Well, I know that John Bedini has been meticulously through the foundation and is quite familiar with the microscope and the generator and how to make it.
Great. Well, I'll try to make it to the Health Expo next...
The Whole Life Expo.
Whole Life, yes. Okay. I really enjoy your show. This is really great.
All right, Andre. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
We're 22 minutes past 11 o'clock on a Saturday night, and we're talking to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi. Bill, Steve, yeah. And Laverne. I won't keep you long because your previous caller basically has had you answer most of the questions about frequencies. I was wondering whether it was sound waves or radio waves, because you had mentioned that in one of the experiments, a certain shape of glass had broken, so I was taking it to be sound waves, although you're saying now it's radio waves. Is that my understanding?
No, you're correct in that they were experimenting with a wide range of frequencies, and that one day, that one letter, that one paragraph of one doctor writing to the other was that particular comment that something had gotten haywire with the device. It had kicked up to a range, and he did not write in the letter what it was, but that was the effect that came, that it literally destroyed every test specimen. The animals were all fully alive and well. It destroyed all the microorganisms simultaneously, which is even hard for us to believe, but I'm just reporting what the letter said.
Then it was in some sound type of frequency, whether it was in the hearing range or not at
right.
that point. And you were saying that a millisecond was enough. Why wouldn't we have heard that frequency naturally during our lifetimes? That would have wiped out all of the apparent diseases at the time. If it's only necessary for it to last a millisecond, we listen to a variety of frequencies of sound all day.
Mm-hmm.
Why wouldn't we have stumbled across that frequency?
It may be that we have, but I'm not sure that we would even be able to acknowledge that we had. I mean, we do hear certain things that seem to make us feel much better.
Yes.
So it may be in the course of a lifetime that you have stumbled across such a frequency in you. That's why you may not have had such a problem. But at least with this device, we'd be able to duplicate it and knowingly be able to utilize it.
Right. And you were saying that one or two other characteristics were necessary.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something along the lines of maybe a wave that's more complex, like a modulated carrier wave? Or
yes.
Mm-hmm.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, I think, with Greta, Bill, there was, I think you mentioned then, something or made reference to an electronic or electrical cure for disease. Is this what you're referring to at the time? Or is
well, certainly I was aware of this, naturally
yeah.
knowing that this show was coming up. I'm also aware of a lot of the information that came out of the bioenergetic conference that was held out at the at Universal City last November, and other research that's going on right here in the Los Angeles area dealing in electronic medicine, if you want to call it that, which is the way medicine is going to go, because it works.
It does seem to be a thing, yeah. Does that mean that there is, I'm sure there's a lot of different research in different areas along the same lines. Are they all going to end up finding that there is one common frequencies or way of doing this to effect a cure? Is it all going to come to the same focus, the same cure, or are there going to be multiple ways of approaching disease by electrical means?
Well, I think you're going to see magnetic. Magnetics are used and are working very well in some areas. Certainly electromagnetics. I think that the breakthrough in electromagnetics has been in understanding the potential energy that's found in the scalar wave.
Yes.
Which is probably the strongest thing now. And I'm not so sure that we weren't dealing with a form of scalar wave.
That's what I
With the energizer of the Rife that Dr. Rife was using.
Right.
Yes,
so you just don't know in that particular freak occurrence in their laboratory that day what sequence of events and
right.
what they stumbled onto that eliminated it. It just hit a frequency. And again, from that letter, they had a multitude of different viruses and bacteria that they were working with at the time, and it was just kind of humorous, because when you go and you read the old letters from people who do not expect it to be public record, they were just writing matter of fact, and the individual writing the letter said, we pinched ourselves to see if we were all alive or if we had died, because
right.
they looked, and all the animals, they started running immediately tests, all their slide, everything was completely altered.
Right. Bill, I just want to say this has been the last few weeks of your program. It's been some of the most interesting and yet frustrating shows that I've heard. Everyone comes on, they're brilliant, they have brilliant ideas, brilliant research, although they're being ignored, or perhaps it's just to the point now where they're starting to be recognized by those who will get the information out and make it useful. But it's been frustrating to hear everyone that's come on, including Greta, and I think John was on, OptiSonics and all
mm-hmm.
that. It seems that everybody can get to a certain point about what they're wanting to discuss, and then they're held back that they don't feel they can go ahead and give out more information, or maybe that information isn't available in some cases.
Well, it's interesting to know these people.
I'm sure it is.
And their determination, and all of them, without exception, are really dedicated to helping mankind.
Yeah.
And if you enter the commercial place for funding, no one understands that kind of talk.
That's right.
You know, we have a society that is a greed-motivated society, and unless you're going to be greed-motivated, they don't understand your language.
And we'll do something about that.
Well, it really...
You're doing something about it.
Well, it really ends up to people like yourself, in that what we are trying to do is create a facility where this information is available and readily available for people to make up their own mind. And to, if they have greater awareness than even than we ourselves have, they can do even greater things with this data. So our foundation, we don't feel frustrated at all from the standpoint that we live in a country that we can set up this foundation, this library. We have the data available. Now the responsibility is on you and the other people to take a look at it, and maybe it's a little out of some people's range or thought process, but take a look at it, see if it's valid, and then all of us together can make a difference.
Right. Very good. Stephen Laverne and Bill, thanks very much, and I'll let you get on to your next caller.
Thank you.
You might get frustrated again next week, Jim.
Who's going to be on next week?
We're going to have Dr. Maxine Asher on with a whole hardcore list of data that supports the existence of Atlantis, but try to get anybody to check in on that. I mean, we're looking at photographs under the ground, buildings under the water, roads under the water.
Sure, I've seen some of those. Yeah.
But nobody seems to care.
Oh, they will.
But they will.
This is the time for it. All right. Thank you very much.
All right, Jim, thank you for your call. It's 11:30 on a Saturday night. I'm Bill Jenkins, and Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation is with me, and so is Lorenzo.
That's Renzo, actually.
Oh, Renzo.
Bill, I have a question for Steve.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, let me make an observation. Steve, earlier on during the program, a caller was asking you about the actual frequency range on these vibrations that are being used to cure disease, and he asked if it was on the microwave range, and you said yes. Let me remind you that during the time when Lee DeForest was making vacuum tubes, he didn't even dream that microwaves could exist. I am kind of interested in finding out what kind of range was it that they were using. Was it on kilohertz, megahertz? I know it wasn't gigahertz.
Mm-hmm.
Can you specify more about these frequencies?
Well, actually, to comment, one of the listeners was the one who said the microwave. We didn't say that.
Your reply was, yeah, maybe you didn't understand what he said. I believe there were two persons talking at the same time, but
right.
He did say microwave, and your reply was yes, and I was kind of surprised at the moment.
Well, Lee DeForest would have been surprised, too, as you mentioned. But there was a broad spectrum of frequencies. You would think on those viruses, the bacterias, that they would have been rather close in frequency, but it was in the radio wave frequency, a million cycles for some, 250,000 cycles for others.
That's basically on the low megahertz.
Right.
Actually, the radio station where you are right now is 790 kilohertz.
But see, you're dealing with the numbers that were on their work logs based on the device that they built at the time.
What was the highest frequency that they were able to provide with this generator?
I don't have any idea. We don't have any records on that.
Oh, it's a pity.
Yes, believe me, there's a lot that's a pity, yes.
That's the reason that the research needs to be continued so deeply.
And this is another reason why I'm glad you brought this up, that we're not running out willy-nilly making all sorts of statements and calling and crying for the donations to build something right away. We're trying to accumulate from as many areas as possible as much data so that we can revalidate this and have something that's performing and that is safe. And we're not going to run out because you yourself, you're obviously very educated in this field. This is not an area that you start playing around with and hitting all sorts of frequencies.
Well, we are bombarded by most of these frequencies every day. Right now, I am being bombarded by 790 kilohertz coming from KABC.
Well, I hope it's a gentle bombardment there.
If you live two blocks down the street from where you are, you will consider that to be a bombardment of radio frequencies.
Well, I'm sitting 100 yards from the tower.
I think it's more beneficial then it can be detrimental. I really like this bombardment of frequencies of 790, but in any case, I'm interested in other frequencies too, and I wanted to find out if there was some more specifics about the research that was being done 50 years ago.
No, not really.
Not hardcore data, but there's enough data there to start there and do proper investigation and proper experimentation. But you're right, we do live in a lot of electronic smog. Now, if they'd take all the 98 other radio stations off the air, leave this one, that would help the smog a lot, wouldn't it?
I think it would. I have one more question for Steve. The last two times I heard the address being given, I didn't get the zip code for the World Research Foundation. Can you give your zip code once more, please?
I'll have Laverne give it. I think she does it much better.
It's 91403.
I'm glad you didn't ask me mine, because I can't tell you.
Okay. I got 914...
Oh, 03.
I have 23 here. 91403.
Yes.
Okay, Renzo.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, Al, it's your turn.
Yes. Back in 1930, I was about 14 years old.
Well, listen, you've been around a while.
Yes,
you?
I've been around a while. At that time, I remember there was a sort of a war going on between the doctors and the chiropractors. And the doctors felt the obligation to protect the public from these chiropractors who didn't know what they were doing. The chiropractors started to have electronic machines in their offices that were healing people with waves.
Terrible.
And the doctors got very upset about this and said it was a lot of humbug. And they actually got a law passed, and the law officials came out with axes and went into the chiropractor's offices and chopped up the machines. And it may be just a quirk of our human nature that this wonderful thing was lost back then, because probably the doctors thought they were doing the right thing at the time to chop up the machines. But it certainly stopped all research in that area, and you were a humbug if you were connected with it, you see.
Even though it's interesting to note that physicists have been very aware of that, and again, this was a theme of a congress that we held recently, bridging the gap within the health field between physics and medicine.
Yes.
You have structures. You have individuals who can now prove the existence of a lot of very ancient techniques, and I don't want to go too far off the subject, but I think this would be very apropos. In our November Congress, we had two French MDs who work at the Nuclear Medical Hospital in Paris, France, who injected radioactive isotopes into the acupuncture points and, using gamma cameras, were able to visibly display the entire classical acupuncture system 100%, as it's been stated for thousands of years. My point really is that as science finally catches up with the ways to measure some of these energies, they are not invalidating all of the old techniques. In fact, they're proving a lot of these techniques exist. Now, in this field of electromagnetics, our problem is that the data has really always been there, but the medical establishment, for some reason, doesn't always go by the laws of physics, because if they did, they would be more inclined to follow these exact techniques that we're talking about.
Besides, they'd never get out of college.
No.
But listen, if Mexico will put up with Leotrell, maybe they would stand for somebody having a machine down there that the cancer people could walk in front of.
Why should we have to run and leave our country to go to cross the border to have... And I know exactly what you're saying. We agree with you, too. What we're asking the people really to think about is, shouldn't we try all the different possibilities and see what might be additionally helpful for us? And that's all the three of us are really even talking about on the show.
You won me over.
Good.
Good to have you aboard.
Yeah, Sister Kenny had a bad time, too.
Most of the great innovators did.
Yes.
Unfortunately.
That's all. Thanks.
Thank you.
Wonderful program.
Bye. Good to have you aboard.
22 minutes away from midnight on this Saturday night with Steve and Laverne Ross of the World Research Foundation looking into the tragic story, really, of Royal Rife, his microscope, what he found that could have benefited all of us. But it was perhaps at the wrong time, at the wrong place. We'll be back in just a moment.
The idea of the personality of Rife. In an article that was titled Disease Germs Destroyed, Claim a San Diego Scientist, Cancer Blow Seen After 18-Year Toil by Rife. This article that appeared in 1938 said, the discovery promised fulfillment of man's age-old hope for a specific destroyer of all his infectious diseases. Although Rife avoided any claim that he had established this yet, we do not wish at this time, Rife commented, to claim that we have cured cancer or any other disease for that matter. But we can say that these waves, or this ray, as the frequencies might be called, have been shown to possess the power of devitalizing disease organisms, of killing them when tuned to an exact particular wavelength or frequency for each different organism. This applies to the organisms both in their free state and in living tissues. And I think that gives you a good idea. He was a very conservative individual. He was not one of these people making wild claims. That's a very, very conservative scientific statement.
He was just saying we can't say we cured cancer, but we can kill all of the little mechanisms that call it.
That's right.
And let you make up your own mind, or if you have it, get help.
Right.
Which is the bottom line, isn't it? More important than anything else. You're wrong, Patrick.
Hi, Bill. I've been listening to your show for about a year now, and if you take all the people that have been on your show and all the theories and stuff that you've exposed to the public here, it would seem like this world would really be different.
It would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah. The thing that upsets me, or that I don't understand is a better way to explain it, is how can all this technology and all these ideas either be squelched or lost to the point where we can't find them? Like the microscope and stuff.
I guess the sweet part of it is that they always surface again, so we do end up finding them when the time's right. But I know what you're saying is what happens to them in the interim?
Yeah, well, what brought the question to mind was the fact that you had mentioned earlier a conspiracy or that he had lost the notes, and I wasn't quite sure. I missed the first hour. I wasn't quite sure what it was.
Well, basically, to sum up quickly, you have a device that had hundreds of newspaper articles, was used in the most prestigious scientific and medical establishments across the country, was 10 times more powerful than any microscope even in existence today of a light source, and yet there is not one mention in any book on the history of microscopes. The articles that appeared in the magazines, if you search through computers, you can't even find the name Royal Rife even existing. This is kind of what we were talking about, and we really literally backed our way into the idea that obviously something happened, that a 50,000-power microscope just disappeared.
We can take the point that what happened was greed, and we have a lot of examples throughout history, and perhaps the most notable one was that of Nikola Tesla.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, if you were to take Tesla's inventions out of our society, it would fall flat on its face. But he provoked the ire of J.P. Morgan because he wanted to give the people free energy.
Right.
That was the basic problem. Of course, J.P. Morgan thought giving the people anything was insane. And immediately jerked all of his support of Tesla. He had great influence in Washington. His name began to disappear from the textbooks and from the encyclopedias. You can look into the Encyclopedia Britannica, the brand new one. The article on Tesla in there is less than a column. The article on Edison, on the other hand, who was not near the giant of a genius that Tesla was, takes up almost the entire book of E. So,
has there been any kind of papers or documents to suggest that there was some kind of J.P. Morgan to Dr. Wright or Rife?
Well, yes, he did have some problems with individuals who just happened to have been high elected officials of the AMA, who also were very heavily invested in the pharmaceutical companies and insurance companies.
Hmm. It's just too bad. It really makes me upset. Okay, well, that was it.
Okay.
Well, the thing is we all can be upset, but we look at the positive aspect, and that is that in those times, things seem to kind of be lost very easily. But in today's society, I think a lot more people, thanks to the medias we have, can find out. And just the same way that Laverne and I heard a little bit about it, we hunted and hunted and hunted, and it did exist, and something is happening with it now. I think that's the point we have to look at. We'll be frustrated for one moment, and then we all have to pitch in, work together, and start coming up with the answers that we need.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Patrick,
thank you for your interest. And Lloyd, you're on.
Yes. How do you do?
Fine.
Okay. I have had a virus for about 15 years, you know, and I've done all kinds of experiments from every possible angle. And I think I've zeroed in on a way to deal with it, and using frequencies was part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But all the established medical procedures, you know, that they have now, chiropractic, acupuncture, I use all of these in a chain, in a sequence, a specific sequence, and I'm able to do a similar function as far as knocking down the virus. So I'm basically my own guinea pig, a human guinea pig. And using a vibration is part of this procedure.
That you're using?
Yes.
And it's working?
Yes.
Well, obviously it is. You're talking to us.
Right. But like I say, it's not just the vibration that I use alone. I have to use a little bit of what I call psychic acupuncture.
Well, that's pretty hefty stuff if it's done right.
It is. Because it's the most accurate on an experiment that I did. It's the most accurate, and it gives you the most appropriate acupuncture points. It starts with a chain of command, and then one gets hot, and then you're able to get another one hot, and you go through your whole body and get all your points to where they heat up. But it requires, you know, steps that are unorthodox, because it involves fasting and it involves a certain kind of diet and having a little bit of orange juice for sugar. And it's a whole chain of command.
Mm-hmm.
But getting to your problem, how to get your thing on the market, I do all kinds of experiments to try to stimulate the procedure that I've already developed. And it seems like for your particular thing, could you put that together as like a stereo unit and put it on the market and sell it as, you know, like a biofeedback machine, or get away from the medical, because I already know with dealing with doctors, you cannot talk to them.
I see. We could get those frequencies in a Walkman and away
you
go.
That's it. In fact, you know, the one time I got tremendous results by doing a little of the procedure that I mentioned, using acupuncture, psychic acupuncture, stimulating my points with my own concentration, and then I put some headphones on and I was listening to some music the next day. And I re-stimulated all the points by hearing the music in my headphones.
Well,
that's because I was fasting and was sensitive to that whole procedure.
You had some suggestions going there that worked for you.
Yeah. But as far as if you could put it together, a stereo system that would cost $1,000 a piece, where a person could operate this at home themselves and experiment themselves.
Everybody's little home do-it-yourself hospital.
That would be terrific.
Well, the comment, I would agree with a lot of the things. The problem is that there are a lot of safety factors that always have to be taken into consideration, and you're dealing with elements that can be detrimental. I don't want to be taking the hard establishment side, but that's why a lot of these things have to be checked out, have to be verified. Then the onus of getting them to the public is, this is where the system has to be changed, that when you finally get something that is beneficial, that it's not priced out of everybody's possibility of achieving. So in what we're talking about, we're not even talking about going out and marketing these. What we're talking about is not just the Rife microscope. The Rife microscope is the tip of an iceberg of a whole element, the electromagnetic spectrum, that has not been adequately pursued above board with good research money. And that's really, I think, the even bigger picture of what we're presenting here, that for every Rife microscope, there's hundreds of additional items and devices that should be reevaluated today to see how effective they are.
Well, like the MSO. Now, that was put on the market, but that is not really a healing cure or whatever. I mean, I'm not saying it's a healing cure. What I'm saying is, they put it on the market, and they sell it as a cleaning solution.
Yes.
And you may have to, like, sell your thing as some other, you know, piece of equipment in order to let people use it.
Right. And just a point that came to my mind, too, like, is that many people think that more is better. And like Steve mentioned earlier, they found that actually someone utilizing it once every 3 days versus once every day was actually better for the system. It gave it recuperative time. So that's something that you have to always be careful of, too, when it's, you know, used in the home.
People have a tendency to overwork certain things and to try too much.
Oh, yes, one aspirin. Oh, I've really got a headache. I'll take six.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean, because I've done it myself.
We appreciate your creativity.
Mm-hmm. Now,
my plan is as soon as I finish the end of my experiments, and when I'm totally, which is I'm in the process right now of, like, you know, draining, when I finish my program, my plan is to train people to be able to do the procedure that I've developed on myself for themselves.
It'll never get off the ground. You're fasting. You know, people got to eat.
That's true. That's true. That makes it tough. But the thing is, if it's bad enough, you will do it.
You sure will.
You know what I'm saying?
All right, Lloyd.
Okay, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Lloyd.
Bye-bye. A very creative fellow. You're right.
That's right.
We're 10 minutes away from midnight on this Saturday night with Steve and Laverne Ross from the World. Maybe see a free energy device or two. Joe Newman's going to be out there. You'll see his. He's going to have one there. John Bedini will be there. You'll get to hear some music. We'll show you some scalar activity that the Soviets have put into our very skies around us, and weather control and anti-ballistic activity. That's close to home, so it'll be quite fascinating when you come on out. We have Mary on the line. Hi, Mary.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Oh, I've enjoyed your program very much, Bill. I've listened to you for quite some time, but this is the first time I've called.
Well, where you been?
Oh, well, I've been here. Oh, I want to tell Steve and Lori, is it?
Laverne.
You're doing a great thing for humanity, and just keep it up. But the thing that I do want to say is, you know, when human beings are experimented on with medicine through the AMA, I think that is the biggest crime of all. And there are an awful lot of people being experimented on. And as far as germs and things, you're very right, Steve, because, you know, I don't know if I ought to say this, but I'll go ahead and say this. Somebody is getting into my house, and they're getting into my refrigerator. And it has scared me to the point that every time I have any open food in my refrigerator that I'm going to use the next day or something, I take along with me if I'm going out. My daughter took me shopping one time. We came back, and we start putting groceries away, and I pulled out one of the chairs, and the chairs were split. And this would be every time we would go out. I would sit down on a chair, and I would feel like something was crawling all over me.
So what is your question for Stephen Laverne?
Well, what I would like to know is this. Is there is a microbe, oh, I don't know if I can, there's a little bug in my house, and it looks like coffee grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Would you know what kind of a bug that was?
No, but I can tell you I've seen them before in the food.
Well,
in my spices on occasion.
You have?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well.
They're like a little beetle bug type.
Oh, is that what it is?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it is, though. Sorry.
You can't tell how dangerous it is.
No.
Oh, I know.
But call an exterminator. Yeah. He'll come out and take care of it.
I have. And when he came, he says, oh, you don't have any bugs.
Okay.
And I said to him, I said, don't insult my intelligence. Have a nice weekend, all three of you.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
I don't know how to respond to that call of Mary's. I hope she takes care of the bug problem there. Okay, Vince, you're on.
Yeah, good evening, Bill and mm-hmm. Steve and Laverne. I'm a friend of John F. Crane, and I just called him and got permission to, if you would like to hear, a class action suit that he has filed. I don't know whether it's current in your library, Steve, but this was filed June 3rd at the Southern District of California, United States District Court. And it's called John F. Crane, Plaintiff versus the United States of America et al. For those people who have been looking for information, a copy of this can be gotten from John F. Crane. But it's case number, get your pencils out, 860076GT, and in parentheses it says CM. Hey, allow me, I'd like to just read the first two paragraphs and I think it'll explain everything. It's a 46-page report.
First two paragraphs, and that's it.
Yes, okay. I, John F. Crane, plaintiff, herein declare under penalty of perjury that the cure for cancer was covered up since the 1930s. It has been a secret for 56 years since Royal R. Wright discovered the virus cause and the electronic devitalization of the virus working from 1920 on and in his research laboratory. It is a secret that it is a cover-up, this is the second paragraph, of the Medical American Association, AMA Association, and another example of a conspiracy in restraint of trade and commerce violation 15 of the U.S. Code, paragraphs 1 and 2, that resembles more of a medieval guild protecting its monopoly financial interests than a medical profession dedicated to public service under the Hippocratic Oath, and another example of a political system funded by the drug trust and desiring not to promote the public good when it clashes with a $357 billion monopoly for drugs, radiation, and surgery annually. End of second paragraph. It goes on and gets better.
Well, he spelled out...